Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
Cutting the Curd has been brought to you by Academy Opus Cassius. The Academy Opus Cassius is the cheese industry's unique center for professional development, offering both practical and classroom training in the heart of France. For more information, visit academy-mons.com. That's academy-mons.com. You're listening to heritageradionetwork.org, a nonprofit, member-supported radio station. We're millions strong, with folks tuning in from over 200 countries. We are education. We are entertainment. We are the future of food. May is our membership drive. Become a member and support us while receiving e-newsletters, advanced invites, special discounts, and a membership card. We need your support. Visit our website and click the donate button to become a member today. Thank you for believing in us, and enjoy the show.
You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby, broadcast live to the cosmos on the Heritage Radio Network.
Happy Friday, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Ann Saxelby, and today I am very pleased to have my good buddy Ari Weinzweig of Zingerman's Community of Businesses here with me on the show. Are you with us, Ari?
I am totally with you.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you so much for being on the show and for dealing with my lateness. Driving in New York City, we've decided, is just not ever a good idea.
Not a great idea.
Ever. No, unless you're driving a bicycle, then that everything seems to work a whole lot better. But
okay, well, no worries on our end. I got plenty of work to do to keep me busy. So
I'm sure you do. I'm sure you do. Well, so today we're kind of going to take a departure from our usual, subject matter, which is pretty much just cheese all the time. And we're actually going to talk about bacon, which I think is appropriate because, you know, bacon is one of cheese's best friends, you know, on a grilled cheese sandwich,
like
on a burger, you know, in a messy breakfast, you know, eggs and bacon and cheese scramble. So I think it's a totally appropriate departure.
I like it.
So, and we're going to talk to you about Camp Bacon. Camp Bacon is coming up this year at Zingerman's in Ann Arbor, Michigan. This is the fourth year that you guys are doing it. Is that correct?
It is. When I wrote the bacon book, whatever that is, 5 years ago, I guess, so Zingerman's Guide to Better Bacon, I sort of made up the idea of Camp Bacon just in a little flight of writing fancy, and I don't know, about 6 months after the book came out, Pete Garner, who works with us, we were joking around in a meeting, and he said, like, we should do that, make it happen, and I was like, yeah, you're right, let's make it happen. So we decided to make Camp Bacon be real instead of just fiction, and so this is the fourth year we're doing it, and we do it as a fundraiser for Southern Foodways Alliance down in Oxford at Ole Miss, which is, I think, a really fabulous nonprofit,
yeah.
And then also for the local 4-H in the interest of helping support local agriculture, and we got a whole weekend of bacon, all sorts of things.
I was thinking, I was writing questions and stuff, and I just couldn't help myself from all these ridiculous puns. But you know how they always talked about fat camp when you were a kid, like you get threatened, you know, and be like, oh, they're going to send you to fat camp in the summertime. I was thinking this is like the good version of fat camp, you know.
I think this is just the good version of camp.
Yeah.
Like I went to Jewish camp.
Yeah.
But actually last year we had Tamara Adler.
Oh, uh-huh.
Who you probably know. And whose book is fantastic, I think. But she grew up, her dad actually ran a Jewish camp in Maine called Camp Moden. And so her talk was actually from Camp Moden to Camp Bacon.
That's awesome. So can you tell us a little bit about, like, the program? What are the different elements
absolutely.
Of Camp Bacon?
So Thursday. Thursday night next week, we have a bacon ball, a bacon-themed dinner at the Roadhouse. So we'd be about five courses, lots of bacon in all forms, which should be great. We got a few seats left for that if anybody wants to come out.
And I guess, who
won a James Beard Award and all those other good things, we'll be cooking up a storm. So it's between that and the fact that there's a lot of bacon, it's kind of hard to imagine it being anything other than amazing. Friday, we do have a class at Bake, which is our baking school for home bakers, but unfortunately or fortunately, depending on which perspective one looks at it from, it's sold out. And then Saturday is the main event, and we have a few seats left for that, and that's goes from 8 to 4 Saturday, and it's at Zingerman's Roadhouse. And we've got an amazing lineup of speakers and presenters, and we've got Herb Eckhouse coming from Iowa, who you've probably interviewed or will be interviewing if you haven't, who does amazing work with sustainable hog raising and traditional curing of pork products. Sam Edwards, who I know Heritage has done a lot with, third-generation bacon maker. We've got Bob Newski, the man himself, who apparently almost never goes to anything like this, but somehow we've managed to convince him to come and tell stories.
You're a pretty persuasive guy, Ari. I think.
Well,
you know,
it took me 4 years to get it, but he's a great, great, great storyteller and a super nice guy. We've got Nick Spencer, who is a Englishman who married an American woman, moved to Chicago, and longed for his bacon, and so started, even though his profession is marketing, started to learn how to make British bacon, and so he's got a whole business making British back bacon, so he's going to talk. And let's see, we've got the leading expert on the Israeli pork industry.
That's an interesting thing. I mean,
Jeffrey Yaskowitz is coming from New York, actually. We got Audrey Petty coming from Chicago to read poetry. She's an amazing writer and poet. And then we have Natalie Channon coming, and Natalie is, if you look up alabamachannon.com, Channin, she does amazing clothing in Alabama.
She's a seamstress?
It's beautiful, yeah.
Wow.
And she's coming up, and she's going to do a half-day sewing workshop at Zing Train on Friday, and then come to Camp Bacon and do something on sewing with bacon. And then she's actually staying for one of our Zing Train seminars, because we have a two-day seminar on visioning, which I teach, and she's going to stay for that. So we're going to have her like all weekend.
That's awesome. That's so awesome. You know, listening to you run through this, it reminded me, you know, Patrick and I were talking the other day about Carlo Petrini, and how before he started Slow Food, he was part of this group. I can't remember what the acronym is now, but it was basically like the Recreational Society of Italy. And it was kind of like this, and you probably know more about it than I do, but this to me sounds a lot like it. It's like, it would like, get organized sewing conferences for, for old ladies, and, have like, folk music get togethers for people who are still kind of practicing the local folk songs and traditions, and basically any kind of, like nerdy but awesome activity you could think of, like, fell under the umbrella of this organization. It sounds like the Camp Bacon is like a mini, it's a mini one happening right in Ann Arbor.
Well, we like, that's part of why I love Southern Foodways, actually, is because I feel like it's such a good blend of intellectually interesting activity with fun, with really great food and great people. And I always learn a lot when I go to the symposium, and everybody's really nice, and I eat really well. And those are really, for me, kind of where it's at: good people, good food, and good learning. And so, there's a lot of events with bacon around the country where it's just sort of like eat a lot of bacon, drink a lot of beer, which, there's certainly nothing wrong with either of those two, but we try to make it a little more intellectually interesting and a little more interpersonal. So poetry and sewing and fun and games and some history and all sorts of stuff. And it's pretty cool. We also have somebody, I should say, coming from Fermin to talk about the Iberico pigs in western Spain.
Wow.
And then Sunday we have a street fair out at the Ann Arbor Farmers Market from 11 to 2, and we use that to raise money, like I said, for 4-H, and we have about 15 different vendors selling pork-related products and a lot of games for kids and all that sort of stuff and have fun.
And do the 4-H kids, do they, like, exhibit any pigs or anything like that?
They have brought pigs. Usually we have them bring a couple of pigs. And we buy a lot of Alex Young, who's our partner at the Roadhouse I mentioned, he often buys 4-H animals at the auctions. And then that's the animals that go to Cornman Farms, which is our farm, and he finishes them up there.
That's great. That's very cool. So you got the whole virtuous cycle there.
We're trying.
Yeah. And I should say, our Sophie Schlesinger, my co-host, has just joined us.
Is she in traffic too?
She was in traffic, and then she was actually procuring some sticky buns from Roberta's because that is a... the sticky buns here are pretty great. They probably have some pork fat in them too.
Yeah, but... But very happy to be back in the booth, and
Southern
Foodways.
And talking about Southern Foodways, yeah, Sophie went to school down at Emory, and
I have a very big academic crush on Southern Foodways Alliance.
For good reason.
Yeah, so
maybe
really
Southern
exciting.
Foodways Alliance has a crush on you. You don't know.
Oh man, I don't know about that.
We were just talking. Yeah, we've got to get down to the symposium one of these years. That would be really cool. I think actually it's time to take a really quick break, but when we come back, I'd love to talk with you a little bit more about some, like, you know, get into the nitty gritty of bacon, different varieties and such. So stay with us. We'll be back in just a minute on Cutting the Curd.
This song is called Basilica by The Hollows, and you're listening to Cutting the Curd on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Change is coming around the bend, shotgun wedding and a story penned about a bishop who gave up his soul to feed a girl from the finger bowl. Next time you step up for the intention.
The Academy Opus Cassius is the cheese industry's unique center for professional development, offering both practical and classroom training for cheese professionals ready to move their careers to the next level. When you come to learn at the Academy, we instill our love for cheese, our expertise, and our experience so that you can support artisanal producers, impeccably care for the fine cheeses you carry, and serve your customers with skill and enthusiasm. We integrate hands-on practice, formal instruction, and classroom discussion in all of our courses. The Academy's programs are offered at the Mons Fromagerie in the heart of France, where cheese undergoes affinage and cheeses are received, prepared, and shipped. Several Mons retail shops are nearby. The surrounding countryside is the home to producers whose excellent cheeses are cared for by the Mons team. The Mons cheese business has more than 50 years' experience caring for and teaching about cheese in France, a country known as the source of some of the world's greatest cheeses, deepest cheese tradition, and the highest level of technological research and rigor in cheese making and ripening. The Academy has been recognized by the American Cheese Society as the first approved education center for those preparing for the Certified Cheese Professional Exam. Enroll now for Essential Foundations for Cheese Professionals or Affinage, the Art and Science of Maturing Cheese. For more information, visit www.academy-mons.com. That's academy-mons.com. Certified Cheese Professional is a registered trademark of the American Cheese Society.
All right. We are back on Cutting the Curd. Thank you to Academy Opus Cassius for your generous sponsorship of the show. And today we are here talking with Ari Weinzweig of Zingerman's in Ann Arbor about Camp Bacon, which is set to happen next weekend. Ari, if people want to get tickets or learn more about these events, what's the website?
The best thing is zingermanscampbacon.com. And if they want to email me directly with questions, also, that's totally fine. Ari@zingermans.com.
Awesome. Awesome, awesome. So I guess, as far as bacon goes, for you, like, is there a particular breed of pig that you think just makes awesome bacon, or is there a specific technique that you could point to that, you know, makes a superior bacon? I'm curious to know how you qualify these things.
what makes for good bacon. So, I mean, that's really what most of the book is about, is and sort of what drove me to write the book was really not that I'm like the most passionate bacon eater in the world, but really more, I mean, I love bacon, but it really came out of frustration in a way, because I felt like everybody was talking about how much they loved bacon, but they never really got into any detail about what made good bacon good. And, you know, when you talk cheese, as you do so eloquently, everybody appropriately gets into, you know, what sort of milk and what was the animal, the breed of sheep or cows or goats, and how was the milk handled, and, you know, what's the aging process, and did we wash the rind, and, you know, all of the things that we all discuss all the time. But with bacon, they would just tell you it was so good and it was bacon.
You need like a bacon monger.
There's got to be more to it than this. And, you know, no offense, but Oscar Mayer or commercial bacon is not the same as, you know, what Sam Edwards does. So I really wanted to be able to teach people and share what I knew, you know, about what made good bacon good, and then to really talk about, you know, all the nuances of artisan production the same way we all do with whether it's cheese or bread or wine or whatever.
So could you give us like the quick and dirty version? Like, so what are some of those?
That's what I was going to do.
Oh, so, great.
So what are the things? Number one, you asked, yes, breed for sure. The old breeds almost always were going to produce a more interesting bacon because the flavor of the meat was more interesting and more fat. Number two, you know, how the animals are raised. So generally you and I would prefer that the animals be raised out, you know, where they're running in the pasture, moving around. That's going to make a big difference. Third thing, what they eat will make a big difference. This is all the old historical stuff, which is now starting to be revived, you know, around peanut feeding or whatever the animals, you know, would eat, or in Spain, Western Spain, the acorns. Then which cut of pork it is. So in the U.S., we know belly as bacon, but if you go to the U.K. or Britain or much of Europe, it's actually back bacon from the loin. So that's going to give, both are good, but completely different texture or flavor. Then whether it's a dry cure or wet cure, not one isn't good or bad. It's just different styles. So the dry cure is just what it sounds like. The fresh pork goes into salt or salt, sugar, and spices and is cured that way. The other goes into a brine solution, a salt brine solution, and the brine solutions tend to be used more in the colder northern climates, and the dry cure more in the temperate climates, like the Mediterranean or the Middle South here in the U.S. Then after that, is the meat smoked or not? Not all bacons are, so pancetta is not smoked, and there's a few here in the U.S. that have historically not been smoked. What type of smoke, what wood is used to smoke, and how long it's smoked, all of those will make a difference. And I think that's it.
That's a lot. That's spoken like a true, you know, someone who's written a book on bacon. That
Baconado.
Was like everything in a very concise and wonderfully phrased format. I feel like you're a bit of a food historian yourself. And I've heard once or twice that bacon is like the olive oil of America. What do you think about that? And do you think
is it
our national fat?
Up, so
did you make that up? That's
you
amazing.
I wrote about it in the bacon book that it started to dawn on me.
So see, I haven't even read the bacon book yet, and I know that quote. So it's like it's out there.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
It's like one of those things where you make something up, and then somebody tells you they heard this really great idea, and you're like, that's my idea. But I don't mind it. That's a great thing. It's like Thomas Jefferson said, you know, that ideas are like, it's like lighting another candle. You still have yours and the other one is lit. So it's not like anything really goes away.
Cool.
Anyways, it started to dawn on me that bacon was to North America what olive oil was to the Mediterranean. And so I just sort of wrote this whole essay about why I thought the two were parallel. But you know, if you look at olive oil, and anybody who's been to the Mediterranean like you will know this, but I mean, it's much more than just a fat to cook in. It's part of religion. It's part of the economy. It's an enormous part of mythology and history. It's really the key flavor ingredient in so much of the food. You know, it's the major trade product, et cetera. And so when I started to look at bacon, I'm like, you know, other than observant Jews, Muslims, or vegetarians, really, bacon serves the same role here. I mean, and when you start to read into the history, you know, pork bellies and bacon and pork showed up throughout as the major economic engine driving the economy. It's still the major fat that's in the food, and everybody loves it. It's in all the legend and the lore. So I really started to look at the two as the same, and of course, I grew up in a kosher home, so it was not what we ate, but
yeah,
certainly a lot of other people did.
It's called the gateway meat for a reason, I feel like.
Yes.
Yeah.
I agree. I wrote about bacotarians in the book, which are the vegetarians who only eat bacon and then non-meat item. We have quite a few of those.
And the book is so exciting to me, too, because, you know, I get in such a fluster and I get so upset when people say there's no food culture or food history in the United States, you know, and they'll look at a country like Italy and say, you know, we don't have examples of food that kind of infiltrate the economy and politics and social structure, et cetera. But like you just said, you know, here's a great example of that. And I think that that's such an important thing for us to have on paper.
Yeah, no, I mean, we definitely do. It's, you know, it's just that because so much of the eating style here is, like in Europe, it's, you know, for better and for worse, I mean, things are where they are, and they've been there for centuries, and so, you know, the microclimates, the environment, the soil, you know, all of that impacts the food and the eating, but here you have this huge overlay of immigration that, you know, is a huge factor that really didn't exist there, although it's starting to now, even though a lot of people seem to be in denial about it, but
right.
but we had this huge factor in immigration, and then because industrialization, you know, sort of took over in the 20th century, then that sort of flattened so much, and a lot of things survived, like that you and I learn about through Southern Foodways Alliance or through the artisan products that we all work with, but it definitely leveled, so to speak, the culinary playing field.
And I feel like the last time when I was out in Ann Arbor for the Zing Train in March, we got into a little conversation about, you know, the role that even, you know, that slavery played in these kinds of cooking traditions. And you were mentioning potlucker particularly. And, you know, these traditions, while, you know, they have a, you know, definite unsavory element to them in their politics, you know, that is a big part of American food culture as well.
Yeah, without question. I mean, there's, you know, huge contributions of from Africa in what we consider American cooking, and primarily obviously in the South, but then through the emigration from the South into the North. You know, I grew up in Chicago, and there's all the tradition of barbecue and ribs and things that, you know, came up with African Americans leaving the South to come North, and then, you know, things like the Carolina gold rice that came from Africa, most likely the whole rice growing technology that came from West Africa. And then, you know, the idea of even barbecue, you know, could certainly come from the West Indies and stuff. So there's all sorts of influences that we accept as everyday things, but, you know, obviously came from somewhere and they weren't native to North America.
Yep, absolutely. No, it's fascinating. And I feel like the pendulum's definitely swinging back the other way, largely, you know, thanks to people like you who are, you know, writing books like this, and thanks to the Southern Foodways Alliance, you know, people are really into this stuff. And people, of course, like Herb Eckhouse and Sam Edwards, who are actually, you know, perpetuating and or reviving these, you know, traditions. It's really, it's very cool.
Yeah, no, it's pretty exciting. I mean, we've been 31 years in business, so it's come a long ways.
Definitely. So you're baking class. So you're like not only an educator, but you know how to like make good food too. What are you guys going to be making at your baking class that you're doing?
You know, I'd have to go pull the sheets, but we do some of the things that we produce and ship. So we make bacon cheddar scones. We do a bacon farm bread. We do a whole range of baked goods with bacon. I don't know if we do it in the class, to be honest with you, but it's sold out anyway, so it won't really matter, I guess. But we've been doing a lot of stuff with Hungarian food, and so we've been doing retes, or what most people here would know as strudel, with potatoes and bacon. That's been fabulous, and there will be a whole range of things, I guarantee.
Well, and even if people can't sign up for this particular baking class, you offer classes at your bakery.
Yeah, if they look at Bake with Zing. .com, they'll see all of that. And then also the books, I mean, I think you know, but the last three books I've done and all the books going forward, we've sort of actually gone back to, I guess you could say, slow books. So we've gone back to doing our own books. We do all the design here in-house. They're printed here in the Ann Arbor area, and we're actively trying to stay out of mainstream distribution and off of Amazon. And sort of handle the books the same way we would handle, you know, our food. So like the bacon book, the cover is the old style foil stamping, and you know, we try to use nicer paper and stuff, and people could see that in the business books, which I know you've seen.
At
zingermanspress.com.
That's great. Yeah, no, the books are awesome. Anybody out there who hasn't gotten a chance to lay a hand on them yet, it's definitely great. Well, I feel like, you know, Sophie and I don't know about you, Sophie, but I feel like the bacon bread thing was near and dear to my heart because there's a place called Mazzola's.
Oh, yes.
In my neighborhood in Carroll Gardens that has really good, they call it lard bread.
Which it is.
It is.
I mean, I don't know if that name sounds appealing or not. To me, it sounds appealing, but
me too.
It's pretty straightforward.
Yeah. I feel like there's nothing better.
Actually, when I was moving to New York, I made a list of all the neighborhoods I wanted to see, and then I picked one attraction in each neighborhood to kind of get a feel for it. In Carroll Gardens, it was the lard bread at Mazzola Bakery. And I'll never forget one of my first trips to Brooklyn, sitting on a brownstone stoop and eating this bread that's essentially just like a heavy log of cheese and pancetta and soft buttery bread, like... Oh. Rolled. Yeah.
It's really dense. Next time you come to New York, Ari, we're going to have to cook.
We're going
to
go.
We're going to go.
We at the Roadhouse, we do. I found in a like early 20th century cookbook this thing for, they just called it fried bread, and because we do the old rye and Indian bread, which we call Roadhouse bread, which also was known as thirded bread from the 17th, 18th, 19th century New England. Cooking is a mix of rye, wheat, and corn with a little molasses in it. And so we basically fry it in bacon fat, and we do that for breakfast at the Roadhouse, and it's pretty amazing.
Wow. Got to go back. I only got to have dinner at the Roadhouse. There's so many reasons to return.
Well, if you came for Camp Bacon, you could stay for that visioning that you and I have been talking about for about 5 years.
I know. It's going to happen. It's all going to happen.
Then you could cover the whole thing for Heritage Radio Live.
Yeah. There you go.
Oh, my God.
There you go.
Closed loop.
Aaron Fairbanks, the director of the organization who started off working at Zingerman's way back in the day, is giving me the thumbs up from the studio.
Go Aaron.
Yeah. is there like after Camp Bacon is over, is there like a detox camp to counter Camp Bacon, like Camp Kale?
Camp Kale, yeah.
Or,
that's a good idea. We should follow it up. I'm gonna get on that.
You can tie it in with your farm, absolutely.
Well, the thing is that I think was it 2 years ago or 1 year, I can't remember, we did, Joe York from Southern Foodways is here, and we arranged, there's a local film festival, Michigan Theater is one of the, you know, those old beautiful theaters that's been redone, and it's a nonprofit, and we do a lot to support them, and they have a film festival called Cinetopia, and I guess it was last year, and it happened to be the same weekend as Camp Bacon, so we arranged for Joe to go and do, you know, show like four of his films, and I went with him, and so we had been at Camp Bacon all day, and you know, then we went immediately from there over to this theater where they were showing his films. And so it was that really bad feeling where you were like smoking in the car and all of your clothes smell, and you don't notice it until you go home and no one else has been in the car with you.
You're in a neutral environment.
Yeah, exactly. So I felt like we like walk into this room and we just smelled so intensely of bacon. It was really quite
It could be worse. It could be worse.
It could be a lot worse. I wasn't complaining. It was just a little awkward.
Yeah. I would say that's an added benefit. You know, your clothes are perfumed with bacon as a result of the conference.
You're marketing your product, basically, by your aromatic activities. So.
Absolutely. Yeah, there are a few things in the world that entice people more than the smell of freshly baked bread or bacon frying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. We've been cooking Newski's bacon, I think, literally every day at the deli since we opened in 82. So, and we open at 7, so it means the bacon is cooking by, you know, 6, 6:15, whatever.
Oh,
and
man.
I realize there's, like, kids who grew up down the block, and that's, like, the smell that they would have had every morning.
Lucky kids.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, we're out of time for today's episode. But Ari, thank you so much for not only being on the show, but for dealing with our lateness due to, you know, our crazy Bushwick traffic. And everybody should, you know, check out Camp Bacon online, or, you know, even better yet, in person. It's a great event. It supports great organizations, And yeah, thanks for doing what you guys do at Zingerman's. It's just awesome.
Thank you. And yeah, we'd love to have, we actually have somebody coming from Australia. We got people coming from the West Coast, from Canada. So it's really a great event. And Ann Arbor, for those who don't know, is right, we're 25 minutes from the Detroit airport, so it's really not that hard to get to. And ZingermansCampBacon.com. ZingermansPress.com for the books.
Perfect. Awesome. Okay. Thanks, Ari, and we'll talk to you real soon.
Thank you, guys.
Get some of that lard bread. All right, you too.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hey everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.